Hi everyone, and welcome back to the 16th video of the Old Testament Survey course. In this section, we'll look at the book of Deuteronomy, which is the last book of the Pentateuch. We'll look at this book in the usual categories. First, some background information. As I already mentioned, Deuteronomy is the last book of the Pentateuch, and so the question of authorship and time of writing is the same as the rest of the Torah. Even though Moses' authorship of Deuteronomy has been denied more than for the other books, the evidence still points to Moses as the primary author of Deuteronomy. And it was written near the end of the 40 years of wandering. The name Deuteronomy means second law. Deutero means second, nomos means law. Deuteronomy repeats and reiterates much that has already been stated in the Pentateuch. The Ten Commandments are repeated in Deuteronomy. But this means more than just a restatement of God's law, as we'll see in a second. The Hebrew name for this book is These Are the Words, which comes from the first words of this book in Hebrew. Now, Deuteronomy is the second law in the sense that it is a covenant renewal. As we'll see in a minute, the book of Deuteronomy is actually in the form of a covenant document. And this is a profound demonstration of God's character. Think about it. This is after the golden calf incident, but the covenant is restored. This is after the unbelief in the desert, but the covenant is restored. This is after the 40 years of wandering because of sin, but the covenant is restored. Yes, God's people are punished when they sin, but God renews the covenant and he forwards his promises in his faithfulness. And Deuteronomy, therefore, signals a new beginning for God's people. The covenant is inaugurated for the next generation, just as it was for their parents' generation. And like I said, this comes at the end of the 40 years wandering and at the beginning of life in the land. Therefore, Deuteronomy bridges the gap between the desert and the promised land. And Deuteronomy is kind of Moses' last will and testament because it records his final words of instruction before he dies. And Deuteronomy also serves to summarize the Pentateuch and review God's working and his covenant with his people Israel. All of this in preparation to inherit the promised land. So now let's examine the organization of Deuteronomy. There are actually two ways that Deuteronomy can be organized, and both of these are faithful to the text and the intent of the divine author. First, many scholars have noted that Deuteronomy has the same general outline as a typical covenant treaty from this period. After a brief prelude, which introduces the document, there's a historical prologue, which rehearses the history of God with his people up to this point. Remember Exodus chapter 19, the introduction to the Ten Commandments, where he rehearsed what he'd done to get him out of Egypt before giving them the Ten Commandments? Well, this historical prologue serves the same kind of function. And next, there are covenant stipulations. These give detailed instructions what God expects from his people. And this includes a restatement of the Ten Commandments, and then a variety of laws that reflect God's character. Next, a provision for the covenant document to be stored and publicly read on a regular basis is put in place for future generations. And that's followed by a call to witnesses, such as heaven and earth, to bear witness that the covenant document is entered and is to be taken seriously by both parties. And then finally, just as in a typical covenant document, there's a listing of the curses and blessings. Curses that will happen if the covenant is broken, and blessings that will be experienced by faithful conformity to the covenant relationship. Now, the second way to see the organization of Deuteronomy is around the three speeches of Moses. In this organization scheme, there is the same brief introduction to the book, and then the first speech of Moses, which recounts God's past dealings with Israel. Then the second speech records the covenant laws. The first part of this gives general laws, but then the second part gives more specific laws. The third speech of Moses is a covenant ceremony, and it includes Moses' charge to Israel to keep the covenant. And then the rest of the book can be seen as an appendix to these speeches that address some final items. So the second way to think about the organization of Deuteronomy is around the three speeches of Moses. And like I said, both ways are legitimate organizations of this book. Now let's take a minute to look at a bigger picture organization to address how Deuteronomy fits in the Old Testament as a whole. Deuteronomy has a unique place in the Old Testament that I liken to a hinge in that it connects two parts of the Old Testament. Looking back, it restates the covenant and the Exodus story. It rehearses all that God has done in the past, and looking forward, it talks about how they are to live in the land which they are about to enter in the future. It addresses a new generation and their descendants who live in renewed promises. And as we'll see in future sections, the historical books that follow, they look back to Deuteronomy to make sense of the history that they are living. The history books describe the working out of the blessings and cursings described in Deuteronomy. They see their history from the perspective of this book, Deuteronomy. Now, do you remember this diagram? That the primary history of the Old Testament is told from Genesis through Kings? Well, Deuteronomy is right in the middle of that, at a critical juncture of this history. Therefore, Deuteronomy is a very important book, summarizing what has gone before and preparing for what will come after. Now let's shift and look at the content of Deuteronomy. As usual, we'll start with some key verses. First, Deuteronomy 4, 1 and 2 says, "Hear now, O Israel, the decrees and laws I'm about to teach you. Follow them so that you may live and may go in and take possession of the land that Yahweh, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Do not add to what I command you and do not subtract from it, but keep the commands of the Lord your God that I give you." This passage is an exhortation to keep God's commands, obviously. And they're not allowed to choose which commands to obey and which that they don't. Neither are they allowed to add to any of God's commands. And their obedience relates to their possessing the land that God is about to give them. Next is chapter 6, verses 4 through 7, which says, "Hear, O Israel, Yahweh our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commands that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up." This passage is called the Great Shema. Shema is the Hebrew word for hear. This passage is like the national anthem of ancient Israel, the summary of their entire life. And Jesus quoted this passage as the first and greatest command. That is, God himself is to be his people's number one desire and concern. He is to fill their thoughts, their affections, and their conversations in all of their life. And of course, this is true for Christians as well. A Christian that only thinks about God on Sundays is not living the way they should. The next passage, Deuteronomy 7, 6 through 9, and it clarifies the identity of God's people. It says, "For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. The Lord did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other peoples, for you are the fewest of all people. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your forefathers that he brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the land of slavery, from the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know, therefore, that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commands." God's people are put in a proper perspective. They have tremendous privilege. Did you notice all the echoes from previous revelation, previous promises we've seen in earlier books? But at the same time, they cannot boast in this privilege because they are not the cause of it. God's grace and love are the only reason they are his people, not their own qualifications. Therefore, God's covenant love is the focus of God's people. And the next key passage is chapter 11, verses 22 through 28, which says, "If you carefully observe all these commands I am giving you to follow, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to hold fast to him, then the Lord will drive out all these nations before you, and you will dispossess nations larger and stronger than you. Every place where you set your foot will be yours. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the Euphrates River to the Western Sea. No man will be able to stand against you. Yahweh your God, as he promised you, will put the terror and fear of you on the whole land, wherever you go. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I am giving you today. The curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God and turn from the way that I command you today by following other gods which you have not known." Notice in this passage the promise of the land that he'd promised to Abraham. The promises of Abraham are echoed in this passage. And these verses also summarize the two-sided promise of the covenant. If God's people are faithful to the covenant, they will experience blessings. However, if they are unfaithful, they will experience curses. Both possibilities are clearly communicated beforehand so that they can see the consequences of their actions and respond accordingly. And obviously, they should choose faithfulness and blessing. And the last key verse, chapter 30, verses 11 through 16, has a similar message. It says, "Now what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask, 'Who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it?' Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask, 'Who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it?' No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess." See, this passage stresses that God's will is knowable because he's already given it to them. And it challenges his people to know it and obey it. And like the previous passage, the two possibilities and their consequences are clearly communicated. And God strongly commands them to follow His way and find life. These are some of the main ideas of Deuteronomy as seen in the key verses. And now let's look more closely at the content of each section. First, the introduction verses. This passage sets the historical context. It reviews the history of the Exodus in Numbers. It took them 40 years to take an 11-day trip. And God defeated powerful kings along the way. And then it says that Moses began to expand the law, saying, and then it starts his first speech. Now, the first section of Moses' first speech is a more in-depth historical review of their recent past. And Moses emphasized in all this that God was always faithful. And he points out, whenever Israel was obedient, they succeeded. Whenever Israel was disobedient, they failed and they suffered. Moses points out the history is crystal clear on this matter, and therefore they should learn that lesson well, and therefore they should prepare to be obedient. Duh, not rocket science. Then Moses' second speech lays out the covenant stipulations in detail. And as I mentioned before, this larger section has two parts. In the first part, chapters 5 through 11, God gives general principles, some of which I'm going to summarize. The first thing we see in this section is the second statement of the Ten Commandments. Law's so nice, he says them twice. They're important enough to be emphasized for the next generation as well. Then we see the Great Shema, which we've already read. It emphasizes God is the kind of God that He is. Therefore, He deserves all our love, attention, respect, and obedience. And great stress is made on the need to pass on God's story and His commands to the next generation. See, God is not just for them, but He's also God of their descendants. And reaching the next generation is always a very high priority for God's people. Next, Deuteronomy stresses the need to have both love and fear towards God. Now, this describes a proper relation to God, to have both of these things. Now, you might think these two things seem at odds. How can you love and fear? But they're actually both necessary, and they work together when it comes to God. We need to fear Him because He is God, and we are not. And we also need to love Him because He's God, and we're not. We need to value God and respect God. We need both. You see, if we have just love, we fall into a sentimentality that is soft on sin and ultimately ends up being unfaithful to God. But if we have just fear, we're driven away from God into legalism and we don't have true relationship. We need both. And I've experienced it's possible in human relationships. You know, I love my father, and yet I would never mess with the guy. How much more for our heavenly Father? We're told in Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we're commanded to love the Lord our God, because He is God and we are not. And then the next principle is the absolute prohibition of any form of idolatry. Because God is who He is, idolatry is just stupid. It's insane and it's dangerous. There's nothing even close to Him. So to pursue a substitute is just unthinkable. Then in the second part of this section, seen in chapters 12 through 26, it gives specific application of God's commands for all of life. Their applications aimed primarily at life in the land that God is going to give them. Not life in the desert where they are, but here's how you're to live when you enter the land. They address religious, civil, and personal issues, everyday life, and every part of life. And they're basically elaborations and explanation of issues from the Ten Commandments. Now, your textbook has a very helpful chart showing how this section is an expansion of these issues regarding our relationship with God and our relationship with other humans. And it summarizes this section under the categories of authority, dignity, commitment, and rights and principles. And that's a very helpful discussion if you'd like to follow up further with this. Now, I need to remind you of a disclaimer. Whenever we talk about God's laws, these commands are not requirements to be in God's covenant community. They're just what life is like in God's covenant community. They're never given in order to gain God's favor, but they describe blessed living in God's favor already had. Now, that doesn't mean that they're optional, as we'll see in the next section, which is Moses' third speech. This section begins with detailed plans for the covenant renewal ceremony. This is the plan for the ceremony, which will take place in the land at a place called Shechem, between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Now, this ceremony is commanded here, but it takes place later in Joshua chapter 8. And the next part of Deuteronomy gives a detailed list of blessings and cursing. That is, what will happen if Israel is faithful or unfaithful to the covenant. And this is so pronounced in this kind of two-choice, two-result connection. It's been called Deuteronomistic theology, the theology of Deuteronomy. And we'll look at that concept in more detail in just a minute. And the next part is a command to choose between life and death. Going on from where we read a little earlier in chapter 30, it says, "This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." The command is to choose now in the desert how you will behave when you get into the land. This is what I call advance decision making. Decide in advance. Plan and act now for future temptations and decisions. See, nobody floats along and just drifts into holiness. Nobody stumbles into greatness. If you're not prepared for temptations and decisions, you likely won't do very well. Someone once said that championships are won at practice long before they're won in the game. So we need strategy and a plan to serve God. I suggest we think very carefully about these two choices and their consequences, and then purpose deep in our hearts that we will serve God no matter what, and develop a strategy to carry this out. And then the last section of Deuteronomy is an appendix detailing final preparation to enter and live in the land. First, there's a transfer of leadership to Joshua. Joshua is already second in command after Moses. He's Moses' right-hand man. But this succession is clearly confirmed by God for all the people to know. Next, provision is made for regular reading of the law and reminder of the covenant. You see, we humans, we forget. We stray so easily, so quickly. We all need regular reminders of the truth and reality of God. By the way, that's why good churches train their people to read the Bible daily, so that God's word is more of an influence on our mind than the TV is. And the next section in Deuteronomy is the Song of Moses. This is a song that God teaches Moses, and he commands Moses to teach the people of Israel to sing. And this is kind of an unusual song for them to sing, because it's basically an accusation against them. You know, imagine, they basically sing a song about how much they suck. Technically, this song is a covenant lawsuit. It addresses the past and the future. It addresses how Israel has been unfaithful, and it predicts Israel's apostasy, yet God's continued grace. And in the future, God's prophets use the language from this song to accuse Israel when they fall into idolatry. They say, I told you so. God said in advance this was going to happen. This is exactly where you're at. And then Moses gives his final charge and his farewell. He gives a blessing for each of the 12 tribes, similar to how Jacob did it in Genesis. And this is God's sovereign predictions for the future of each tribe that we see worked out later in the Old Testament. And then Moses is told to climb to the top of Mount Nebo. And he looks over from there and he sees the promised land from afar. You see, Moses sees the promised land, but he never enters it. And Deuteronomy ends with the death of Moses. And Moses gets a eulogy of a hero, loved and honored by all. This is the content of the book of Deuteronomy. Now let's look at the theological themes. The first theme is Deuteronomistic theology. This, as we saw earlier, is that there is blessing for obedience and there's curses for disobedience. It's if-then theology. If you do this, you get this. But if you do this, you get this. They're clearly lined out results and retribution for different responses to God. And it's very black and white, in or out, blessing or cursing. Choose one side or the other, and you're choosing your destiny. And the second theme is covenant. We've already seen this theme in earlier books, so I'm not going to explain it much, except to say that it is a major idea in the book of Deuteronomy, even to the point that Deuteronomy is in the form of a covenant renewal document, as we've already seen. And the third theme is monotheism. Monotheism is a combination of the word mono, which means one, and theism, which means worship of God. Therefore, monotheism is the idea that there is only one God and faithfulness to that one God. See, Deuteronomy emphasizes that God is one. He's the only God. There is no other. And therefore, he deserves exclusive worship and loyalty. The fourth theme is love and fear. As we already talked about, we need both of these, and the two go together. This is the appropriate response to who God is. The fifth theme is no idolatry. Because monotheism is the truth, idolatry is insanity. And in Deuteronomy, in talking about the future and the land, it promises that God will reveal the one place he's to be worshipped. And this is the only place where he should be worshipped. And we'll see how this plays out in later books. But remember, the clear idea in Deuteronomy is that devotion to anything beside God is forbidden. And then the final theme is driving out the nations. God commands them to drive out the nations who are living in the promised land, and he promises that he would go before them to make this happen. And as you're reading, notice all throughout Deuteronomy, the land is not called the land. It's not even called the promised land. but it's called the land which the Lord your God is giving to you. I mean, it repeats this so much. This drum is beat time and time again throughout Deuteronomy, looking forward to entering that land which the Lord your God is giving you. These then are the themes of Deuteronomy. And because Deuteronomy is the last book of the Pentateuch, let's take a minute to review and summarize the Torah as a whole. These five books cover the first two and part of the third epic of Old Testament history. And the rest of the Old Testament builds on this foundation, that God created everything good, humanity rebelled against God and spiraled downward. God made a promise to Abraham to bless the world through him, and this promise was protected for his descendants. And God rescued them out of Egypt and entered a covenant relationship with them to be their God, and they will be his people. And he brought them to the border of the land he is about to give them and gave them directions how to live once they're in the land. Now, whenever I teach this material in a classroom setting, at this point, we typically have a discussion about how would we summarize each book in one word. And we usually play a game to see if the students can figure out and guess which word I would choose. Now, I suggest this is helpful. I suggest you think about this before I tell you. How would you summarize each of these five books using only one word apiece? But you better think about this quick or pause the video because I'm about to tell you. Here are the five books of Moses and their five summary words. First is Genesis. Now, there are a few possibilities for Genesis, such as promise. But I think the obvious choice to summarize Genesis in one word is the word beginnings. Next is Exodus. This one's a little tougher. It could be covenant, could be presence, could be name. But I've chosen the word salvation, because this word encompasses both the rescue from Egypt, that is what they are saved from, and the covenant relationship with God, what they are saved for. And the third book is Leviticus. Now, this one word could be sacrifice, could be worship, but I think the word holiness covers both right worship and right living. Fourth is the book of Numbers, and this was a tough decision. I almost went with the word rebellion. But remember, Numbers is not all rebellion. There is some obedience and faithfulness. Therefore, I chose the word wandering, because the entire book is spent wandering in the desert, and the reason for their wandering is their rebellion and unfaithfulness. And finally is the book of Deuteronomy. Now, second law is two words, so that obvious one is disqualified. And as we talked about, it's more than just a restatement of the law. It's a renewing of the covenant relationship. Therefore, I summarize the book of Deuteronomy with the word renewal. Now, I hope these five shorthand handles will help you to remember the message of the five books of Moses for the long term, long after this class. And I hope that the shorthand summaries of the organization and the themes of each of these books helps you to remember, understand, and apply these books to your life. Therefore, let's review now. First, the organization of the book of Deuteronomy. What I would like you to remember is that there are two legitimate ways to organize the book of Deuteronomy. And they are as the pattern of a typical covenant and around the speeches of Moses. Next is the themes of Deuteronomy. And they are Deuteronomistic theology, covenant, monotheism, love and fear, no idolatry, and dispossessing the nations. A helpful memory device around the first letter of each theme of Deuteronomy is Deuteronomy come into the land. And finally, the one-word summaries for the Pentateuch are Genesis is beginnings, Exodus is salvation, Leviticus is holiness, Numbers is wandering, and Deuteronomy is renewal. There you have it. We have completed our survey of Deuteronomy and the five books of Moses as a whole. As we go through the rest of the Old Testament, keep these books in mind because everything builds on this. In the next section, we'll introduce the historical books, and then in the following, we'll start with the book of Joshua. Thanks for watching.